imagine, you strike a deal, right, to get off death row, you serve your time, you think you're in the clear, then bam, years later, you're right back on death row. That's the crazy story behind this case, Ricketts v. Adamson. It's a Supreme Court decision, and it really gets into plea bargains and the whole idea of double jeopardy.
Yeah, it really makes you think about the power prosecutors have, you know? Can they basically just hit the reset button if someone breaks a plea deal?
So this all goes back to 1976. John Harvey Adamson, he was charged with murdering a journalist in Arizona, a guy named Donald Balls. Adamson's staring down a possible death sentence, so he takes a plea deal.
Right. He pleads guilty, but to a lesser charge, second-degree murder. And in exchange, he's got to testify against the other guys involved, Max Dunlap and James Robeson.
That sounds pretty straightforward.
You'd think so. Adamson testifies. Dunlap and Robeson get convicted. Adamson starts doing his time. Seems like case closed, right?
Yeah, what else could happen?
Well, the Arizona Supreme Court, they overturned Dunlap and Robeson's convictions. So now they need new trials. And of course, the state wants Adamson back on the stand.
Okay, so that's where things get interesting, right?
Exactly. Adamson, he refuses. He's saying his obligation to testify ended with the first convictions. He's like, making me do it again, that's double jeopardy. Fifth Amendment, right?
Makes sense. I mean, he did his time based on that deal.
Yeah.
So he's thinking he held up his end of the bargain.
That's how he sees it. But the state, they see it differently. They're like, nope, you refusing to testify, that's you breaking the contract. Plea deal's void.
So you have Adamson saying it's his constitutional right, and the state saying, no, this is a binding agreement. Then what?
The Arizona Supreme Court, they took the prosecution's side. They said Adamson breached the deal by refusing to testify, so he basically waived his double jeopardy protection.
Hold on. They brought back the original murder charge.
Yep. They convicted Adamson of first-degree murder, slapped him with the death penalty. I mean, talk about high stakes. This decision sent shockwaves through the system. The case, it ended up going all the way to the Supreme Court.
But wait, isn't the whole point of double jeopardy that you can't be tried twice for the same crime?
You're right. Fifth Amendment does say that. But in this case, the question was, can you waive that right, even if you didn't mean to, by agreeing to a plea deal?
So what did the Supreme Court say about this whole double jeopardy thing? Did they agree with Arizona?
It was close, but the Supreme Court, they sided with Arizona, 5-4 decision. They upheld the death sentence. And their reasoning, it really shows you how the legal system looks at these plea bargains.
So how did they justify sending a guy back to death row just because he wouldn't testify again? I mean, that's pretty intense.
Well, they basically said plea bargains, they're contracts. Just like any other contract, they got to be enforced by the book, you know, according to what they say.
So they kind of ignored the human side of it and stuck to the letter of the law. I mean, what in the agreement did they use to back that up?
There was a clause in there. It said if Adamson didn't hold up his end of the deal, which was to testify whenever they needed him, they could bring back those original charges. The court said Adamson knew what he was signing up for, and when he refused, he broke the contract.
So even though he already served time, they were basically like, tough luck, you broke your promise, back to square one.
Yeah, pretty much. And they addressed the double jeopardy thing directly. They said, yeah, double jeopardy is a fundamental right, but you can waive it only if it's clear and you do it willingly, though.
I think I see where they're going with this.
So with Adamson, they said by agreeing to that plea deal, he knew he was giving up his double jeopardy protection if he didn't testify.
Yeah, that's a big deal. Really shows you can't mess around with these plea agreements.
No kidding. This decision really shook things up in the legal world. Basically, if you break a plea deal, the state can kind of hit rewind, put you right back where you started.
This is really making me think. It's easy to get caught up in all the legal back and forth, but this is a man's life we're talking about.
Yeah.
Were there any justices who didn't agree with the majority?
Oh, yeah. The dissenting justices, they were pretty vocal about it. They thought the court's decision was way too simple, like they missed some important details. They said Adamson's take on the agreement that he only had to testify the first time wasn't that unreasonable.
So they're saying maybe the agreement wasn't as clear-cut as the majority made it seem.
Exactly. They pointed out that the agreement didn't specifically say Adamson had to testify in any retrials. And even if refusing was breaking the contract, they said the state should have tried other options before going nuclear, you know, reinstating the first-degree murder charge and all
Yeah,
that.
what else could they have done?
Well, the dissent suggested maybe they could have used his testimony from the first trial or tried to work out a new agreement with him. They thought jumping straight to the death penalty was way over the top, didn't really consider the whole picture.
So the dissent was really focused on whether the punishment fit the crime? You know, was it proportional to what he did?
Exactly. They were worried about things being unfair when plea agreements are treated like these rigid contracts. You know, they said it ignores the power imbalance. Like, prosecutors have way more power than defendants. Especially when you're facing serious charges, you might feel pressured to take a plea, even if you don't totally get what it means.
This case is fascinating. It goes way beyond just legal stuff. We're talking about fairness, justice, how the system actually works in the real world.
You got it. Ricketts v. Adamson, it made everyone think about plea bargains, who has the power in court, and how these decisions really affect people's lives.
We've talked about the majority opinion, the dissenting opinions, but what about the big picture? Did this case change how plea bargains are handled or how people see them?
Ricketts v. Adamson didn't lead to any big law changes, but it definitely made waves in the legal world. It showed that plea bargains can be tricky, and it made those issues front and center.
So, like, did lawyers start doing things differently with plea agreements after this?
Oh, absolutely. Ricketts v. Adamson was a wake-up call. It showed that both prosecutors and defense attorneys got to be super careful when they're writing and looking at plea agreements.
So, Ricketts v. Adamson, it really made a splash, you know?
Mm.
Showed some cracks in the plea bargain system, got people asking some tough questions.
Yeah, for sure. And even though no laws were changed because of it, it definitely changed how lawyers do things. Both sides, they got a lot more careful, you know, after Ricketts, especially about vague language in plea deals.
Like they say, the devil's in the details.
Exactly. After Ricketts, lawyers, they started looking at the wording of plea agreements with a fine-tooth comb, especially when it came to giving up constitutional rights. They realized any little bit of vagueness could come back to bite them, especially if there's a retrial.
So basically, Ricketts v. Adamson forced the legal world to take a good look at itself, rethink how it does plea bargains.
Yeah, you could say that. It pushed for clearer, more precise language in those agreements. And it got people talking about, you know, are plea bargains ethical? Are they really fair to everyone?
It's easy to get lost in the legal mumbo jumbo, but we're talking about real people's lives here.
Absolutely. And that's why Ricketts v. Adamson is still so important today. It reminds us that, yeah, plea bargains are important, but they can be messy and they can lead to unfair outcomes.
So for someone who might be facing a plea bargain, what should they take away from all this?
If I could give one piece of advice, it'd be this. Don't ever agree to a plea bargain unless you completely understand it. Ask questions. Get things clarified. Make sure your rights are protected.
Knowledge is power, right?
You got it. A plea bargain isn't just some formality. It's a contract. It's legally binding, and it can have huge consequences. You got to know what you're agreeing to, what you're supposed to do, and what rights you might be giving up.
Like signing a big business deal, right? You wouldn't just sign without reading the contract carefully.
Exactly. And you definitely shouldn't do it when your freedom's on the line. If there's anything in a plea deal you don't get, or if you feel pressured, talk to your lawyer. That's what they're there for.
And remember, you always have the right to a trial, even if a plea bargain seems easier.
Couldn't agree more. Weigh your options, think it through, and make the decision that's best for you.
Well, this has been a really eye-opening deep dive into Ricketts v. Adamson. We've learned a lot about plea bargains, how complicated they are, and how they can really change people's lives.
It's a case that still has people talking in the legal world. Reminds us that finding justice has to go hand in hand with being fair and protecting individual rights.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring the fascinating world of law.